Sadly, death at the races is not uncommon. However, three in a single afternoon was sufficiently unusual to raise more than an eyebrow. That only one of the deaths was of a horse was more than enough to bring the local constabulary hot foot to the track. Cheltenham Gold Cup Day had dawned bright and sunny, with a fine dusting of a March frost showing white between the grass. The forecast for the day was dreadful, with heavy rain due to drive in from the west. But as I stood in my ex-father-in-law's kitchen, looking through the window at the westerly sky, there was no sign yet of the warm front that was promised. "There you are, Sid," said Charles, coming into the kitchen in his dressing gown over striped pyjamas, with soft blue velvet slippers on his feet. Rear Admiral Charles Rowland, Royal Navy, retired, my one-time father-in-law, my confidant, my mentor, and, without doubt, my best friend. I still introduced him to strangers as my father-in-law, although it was now some 10 years since his daughter, Jenny, my wife, had seen the need to give me an ultimatum. Give up my job, or she would give me up. Like any man at the top of his profession, I'd assumed she didn't really mean it, and continued to work day in and day out. And so Jenny left, with acrimony and spite. The fact that a crippling injury put a stop to my chosen profession just a few months later was one of those little ironies from which there is no escape. Our marriage had been irreparably damaged, and there was no going back. Indeed, by then, neither of us had wanted to go back. But it still took many years and many hurtful exchanges before we were both able to move on. In time, Jenny and I had divorced, and she had remarried to a title and some serious wealth. Nowadays, we are civil to each other, and I have a real hope that an arm's-length affection may be the end game of our tempestuous relationship. "Morning, Charles," I said. "It's a good one, too."
"Bloody forecasters," he replied. "Never have the slightest idea."
He leaned towards the window to get a better view of the weather vane on the garage roof.
"Southwesterly," he remarked. "That front has still to arrive. Better take an umbrella with us."
I didn't doubt that he was right. A life at sea had given him the uncanny ability to predict the future simply by sticking a wet finger into the air. However, on this occasion, I think it may have been more due to his listening to the radio in his bedroom. His years afloat had also left him with a preference for all-male company, there being no female personnel on ships in his day, and a slow but determined approach to a problem. As he had often told me, it takes many miles to turn round an aircraft carrier, and it's better to be sure in which direction you need to go before you start zigzagging all over the place and showing everyone what a blithering idiot you are. We went to the races in his Mercedes, with raincoats and umbrellas stacked on the back seat. As we drove west from his home in the Oxfordshire village of Ainsford, across the Cotswold Hills towards Cheltenham, the sun began to hide behind high cirrus clouds. It had disappeared altogether by the time we dropped down from Cleve Hill to the racetrack, and there were spots of rain on the windshield as we parked. But the racing festival at Cheltenham is one of the world's great sporting occasions, and a little rain couldn't dampen our spirits. I had ridden so often round this course that I felt that I knew each blade of grass as an old friend. In my dreams I still rode here, surging down the hill towards the home straight, kicking hard into the downhill fence when others would take a hold to steady themselves at this notorious obstacle. Here, many a partnership would come crashing to the turf, if not foot-perfect. But winning was the important thing. And while taking a hold might have been safer, kicking your horse hard could gain you lengths over the fence. Lengths the opposition may not be able to regain up the hill to the finish line.